Hi, everyone. I am here to say thank you. Just the biggest, most grateful thank you that anyone has ever said. Jesse and I are both just like overwhelmed by the incredible amount of love and support that you folks have sent our way since we announced that we're stepping back from Harry Potter. I truly cannot express how much it means to both of us. So to everyone who has sent us a message, whether that's like an Instagram comment or DM or email or Patreon message, honestly, like the number of times I have cried from just reading something so heartfelt and kind in the last week is like, I don't have words. I just, I'm so grateful. I don't know if we're going to be able to respond to every message and email that we've received, but I want you to know that we have read all of them and we are just so grateful. Yeah. And we've had several folks send us donations, which is so kind. We're so grateful. I want to say thank you to Carolyn, Anne, and Fee for leaving us donations. I also want to thank all of our new patrons. As you folks know, one of the big fears that we had in making this decision was about how it was going to affect our Patreon, since this is how we make a living. And while understandably we have had a decent number of folks leave Patreon, folks who were just, you know, who were there for our Harry Potter content and like who for them it doesn't make sense to continue giving us money for content that they don't want, we have had more people join than leave. And that is such an incredible feeling. So I'm gonna shout out both our new patrons and also our patrons who have been around who decided to increase their pledges. So thank you to Alicia, Amelia, Jessica, Melissa, Kate, Alicia, Tony, Rachel, Kira, Hannah, Floor, Anastasia, Rebecca, Caleb, Leah, Jason, Ilana, Martha, Vicky C, Lucian, Allison, Danielle, Dan, Karina, Ruth, Anne, Megan, Jessica, Eli, Jillian, M, Gwen, Jordan, Kimberly, Meredith, and Paula. The feeling in my heart reading those names, it's impossible for me to adequately express how much all of your support means to me and to Jesse. Jesse and I actually recorded a version of this together and then the audio got messed up. So you just have me, but I am speaking for both of us. And this community is amazing and we are just so grateful to all of you. So yeah, the last thing I want to say is that our next episode will be about Black Panther. So if you want to be, you know, watching and reading and whatever along with us as we switch into this new format, I'm going to make sure to always tell you what our next episode will be about so that you can consume that media if you want to. Yeah, that's it. Just once again, thank you all so much. And let's get into the episode. Hello, and welcome to The Gaily Prophet, a humorous yet ruthless podcast where two queer IRL witches do whatever the fuck we want. I am Lark Malachi Gray.
And I am Jesse Blount. And today we're talking about Doctor Who!
Woohoo! The best of days.
We decided to bring the people what they want, slash... both Lark and I really like Doctor Who, so we're going to be talking about the 50th anniversary episode of Doctor Who, The Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, but first we're just going to talk about Doctor Who, like our relationships with it and stuff, like we do when we do these one-off episodes. And before we do that, I'm going to say the things like, please support us on Patreon and buy our merch and... leave us a nice review. especially to like crowd out our like third one star review where someone said a lot of things that are fine. You don't have to think that we're funny or whatever. But the end of it, they were like, it's not edited. And that was, I was like, please give me your email address so I can send you the 7 hours of raw footage of episode one. My dude. Like, these are fighting words. I don't care if you don't think I'm funny, but how dare you say?
Also, I feel like I would never judge a podcast by only having listened to the first episode.
So rude.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, leave us a nice review. We will appreciate it. Did you see that review, Jesse?
I read it today, and I'm like not even mad, because I'm just like, you're incorrect. Yeah. I'm like, this is funny about how incorrect you are.
Yeah.
And right, you do not have to like our podcast style or think that we're funny, but everyone's first episode is rough unless you're like sponsored by like NPR or a lot. You have like a huge budget and not just two queers that have depression. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. It's fine. People leave one-star reviews. That's their business. It says more about them than us. But don't insult my editing. I didn't know how to edit. And also, it was a mess. Anyway, Jesse, please tell me about your relationship with Doctor Who.
You wouldn't watch a show. You wouldn't watch the first episode of Doctor Who that came out literally in 1963 and be like, man, I can't watch any of this new stuff. It's like, have you seen this show? It's so cheesy. Which is to say that Doctor Who has been intermittently on the air since 1963.
It has.
Which is epic for a science fiction show. I think, like many other Americans, didn't get into it until, I don't know, the early, oh geez, the like 2010s. My brother was like, we should watch Doctor Who. And I'm like, okay, I vaguely heard about this because being a sci-fi nerd means that I was vaguely aware of Doctor Who being a thing that people liked. This is before the reboot in 05. And so me and my brother started watching the new Doctor Who, starting with not the Ninth Doctor. But I think 11 was the first Doctor that I watched, like, as the episodes were coming out. So okay. Kind of a fondness in my heart for, like, Amy and Rory and 11. And, of course, River Song, I'm obsessed with, because what? I think if you're attracted to ladies and you watch Doctor Who, I'm like, who isn't attracted to River Song?
For real. River Song is everything.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, as someone who likes sci-fi, especially when kind of like one of the strengths of sci-fi is being able to solve problems without having to use violence. And that's sort of the thesis of the show, mm-hmm. that the Doctor uses intellect and compassion
and a magic wand
and a magic wand related to our fantasy nerds here to solve various problems and have adventures around the galaxy. It's just like through time and space. Like,
yeah.
What is not to love? And of course, also, like any person, like a deep and I think explainable attraction to David Tennant, aka the 10th Doctor.
Yeah.
Because he's just a sexy motherfucker, and I can't, that's all I have to say.
Yeah.
So, yes, Doctor Who is great. Also watched Torchwood, obviously, this one of the 2000s, 2010s spin-offs of Doctor Who, along with I didn't watch the Sarah Jane Chronicles, but I did watch Torchwood, obviously, for being just weirder and freakier than the Doctor Who, which is at its heart an all ages family show, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I'm obviously the opposite in that I have watched the Sarah Jane Adventures, which is like marketed towards an even younger demographic. Like, it's a kid's show, whereas Doctor Who is a family show. But Torchwood was like way too stressful for me, and I could not watch that show.
It is. It's deeply uneven in its quality and its storytelling. It is very sexy, though.
It's grimdark. I can't. It's like,
no, that's fair. And like, Children of Earth was like deeply upsetting, even though I watched the whole series like four times.
I think I might have watched all of Torchwood. I just was like not happy about the fact that I was watching Torchwood.
Yeah.
And like, I still have like, it's not like, I guess it's not a nightmare. It's more like an intrusive thought, maybe, where like my brain just gets stuck on the part where Jack was like, in a coffin underground, like dying and being resurrected repeatedly for like hundreds of years. Like my claustrophobia imploded when that happened. And I wish I could extract it from my brain because it is so upsetting to me.
Yeah, it is definitely like the definition of nightmare fuel at times.
Yeah. So anyway. But you stopped watching it at some point, right?
I did stop watching it at some point. Mostly and I feel like this is hard to explain for people who like weren't on Tumblr during the Super Hulock era, which is a deeply traumatic part of Tumblr fandom where it seemed like every 14-year-old white person watched both Doctor Who, Sherlock, and Supernatural and like posted on Tumblr about it constantly, and also were racist because they were 14-year-old white kids who like didn't know about diversity, like weren't living in a segregated area because most white people live in a segregated area. And it was just such a psychically painful time for me that I like stopped watching Sherlock and I stopped watching Doctor Who like and that was like around the time when like it was transitioning into Claire as a companion, and like, and even though I was like, oh, I should really watch like the Capaldi seasons. I like heard really good things about it. I just didn't get back to it because of the whole, like, I was like, I'm done with all of these things. And considering two out of the three things of Super Hulock was a Steve Moffat production, I'm like, I can't. I'm taking a break. I'm just going to watch literally, actually, I got into Game of Thrones. That's what took over my brain for several years. But then that also ruined my psyche. So I think I'm prepared to come back to Doctor Who. I'm like, nothing's going to ruin my brain and my soul worse than the end of Game of Thrones, so might as well get back into Doctor Who.
I have no basis of like what all of that was. I haven't seen Sherlock or Supernatural, and I'm like honestly so intrigued, but also like, you don't need to explain it if you...
Mostly just like rabid fans with not a lot of life experience who are terminally online, like rabidly justifying two white dudes fucking in various configurations. And just, I couldn't. I just could not. I don't care. I could not. And I'm just like, I need a break from this consuming my brain.
That sounds very fair.
And I think also part of it is that like, I don't know. I was going through, like, this is in my 20s. I was going through, like, an emotionally rough time. So, like, all I did was spend time on the internet thinking about fandom. But I'm in a much healthier place mentally now than I was when I quit Doctor Who. And this episode kind of was, like, actually very exciting. I'm just like, oh, yeah, this is, like, a lot of the fun things that I love about Doctor Who. Yeah. Like, just hearing the theme song, I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm so excited. It's like Pavlovian response about like, yeah. Ooh, what's gonna happen?
Yeah. I'm very excited for you to watch, like to get caught up, even though we were talking off the air the other day about like a lot of the really fucked up, especially around race stuff that happens in Capaldi's third season.
I mean, I did survive a whole season with Martha as a companion, which often had a lot of fucked up race shit, so.
Yeah.
I didn't stop watching after that, so. But yes, I'm mentally prepared to be like cringed, to have like a lot of cringe about it.
Yeah, and I honestly, if you don't care about spoilers, might recommend listening to the Woke Doctor Who episode where they dig into sort of all of the race stuff in Capaldi's run, because the way that I personally relate to media, I feel like hearing people who have podcasts like ours, like tell me everything that I need to be prepared for in a like nuanced and thoughtful way before going into it makes it like easier for me to approach it. But I don't know if that's...
I used to not be that person, but now I am.
Yeah.
I realized. Now I'm like, is this going to be potentially emotionally upsetting for me? I need to have spoilers for it. I need to know what I'm getting into before I emotionally invest.
Yeah.
So
it's helpful.
Yeah. Anyway, tell me about your journey slash relationship with Doctor Who.
So I don't remember when I started watching it. I know that Evan introduced me to it. So it was sometime after 2010. So we binged like the first four seasons. And then when the 10th Doctor dies, for whatever reason, I was just like, I can't meet a new Doctor right now. Like, I can't do this. And we stopped watching it. And then we like didn't have cable again or like any streaming services again for like a long time. And sometime in the past, however many years, I was like, all right, I'm ready. And like watched all of it again. And then was like, I was so silly to stop watching it because Matt Smith is my favorite Doctor, like by a lot.
He does an excellent job. I feel like people gave him shit for the youngest incarnation of the Doctor so far, but I'm like, Matt Smith does an excellent job.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, agreed. Yes. I know everyone is like, David Tennant is like the Doctor. Like, you know, this new era that we're about to enter into is being like, look, the Doctor Who that you've missed is back, and we can prove it by having a 3-episode run with David Tennant as the Doctor. It's okay. Everyone take a breath. But yeah, Matt Smith is my Doctor. And yeah, like you, I fucking love River Song with my whole heart. I definitely recommend that everyone who's like really nerdy do the thing where you look up like River Song's episodes sequentially from like her perspective and watch it like that, because it's very fun. Yeah, when the pandemic started, I watched seasons 1 through whenever Capaldi left, so seasons 1 through 10, and then like finished that and then did it again. Like, it's just my comfort show, and it's the show that I go to when I'm having what I now recognize our autistic meltdowns, where I'm like, my dogs are barking and like things are happening and I'm crying. Like, the one thing I can do is put on my noise canceling headphones and turn on Doctor Who, and then I will be better. So it's like very, very much my like safe space, my comfort show.
Which means, folks, that we will in fact not be pivoting to creating a Doctor Who podcast, no matter how much you guys might want that, because it's good to not monetize all of your comfort things.
Yeah, I can't turn Doctor Who into work. I simply cannot.
Also, there's a ton of excellent Doctor Who podcasts out there for y'all. So
yeah, you can even hear us on one of them, on the Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey podcast. We've both been guests.
Were we on episode of Woke Doctor Who, or were they on episode for...
They're on an episode of our podcast.
All right.
Yeah. And then I stopped. Well, I didn't stop watching. I've watched all of Whitaker's seasons, but like, I think they're a mess. I think that Chris Chibnall like drove this ship into the ground.
Oh, no.
I love her as a Doctor and I love her companions, but like the episodes are just like not good. And also it got like really gritty. Like, they forgot that they were a family show, and the production value, like they just like got so much money. And so they were like going really hard on creating these like very beautiful things, where I'm like, no, I want like cheap and campy, and you're giving me like gritty and expensive, and then it was only coming out every other year because it cost so much. Anyway, I'm very bitter. I'm very glad that Chibnall is stepping back. Yeah, so you texted me and were like, we should give a like, what is Doctor Who for folks who maybe are never gonna watch Doctor Who.
Yeah, so this is actually really funny, because when I was originally watching Doctor Who with my brother, when like in the 2010s, I had to pirate the shit because it was only available on the BBC. Mm-hmm. And now it's available on HBO, which is like, or like, what was it, BBC America?
I think it was on Hulu. It was on Hulu for a long time.
Yeah, it was on Hulu for a long time, and then it wasn't, but now it's on HBO, which is really nice. But yeah, for a long time I had to pirate it. So Which feels very vintage.
It's gonna be switching to Disney Plus like pretty soon too. Which just is for the record.
Weird.
It's great, actually. Like, at least Davies is like, this is exactly what I wanted for Doctor Who when I like brought it back in 2005.
Wait, are they bringing back Russell T. Davies?
Huh?
Are they bringing back Russell T. Davies? Did I not know this?
Yeah, he's taking back over.
Good. Take Disney's money and make it real clear.
He's like, I just want a Doctor Who expanded universe the way that Star Wars has an expanded universe now that Disney has it. So like, this is what I want. I want the Disney money so that I can create the Doctor Who expanded universe that I've always dreamed of. So
which is
going
to be great.
Great.
Because I am lukewarm about Star Wars in general, but I know the extended universe shows on Disney have been like top notch shit, which is like great because one of the biggest weaknesses of Star Wars is that it's all about the Skywalker family, which is boring.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the Doctor as a character isn't boring, it's still great to have an expanded universe of characters that have been on Doctor Who. So this is gonna be great.
Yeah.
Putting out in the universe, I would also love to watch. Like, I don't know. It doesn't have to matter why. Animated episode of Doctor Who. Just saying.
Ooh, that would be such a good way to like have like a full River Song spinoff.
Yeah. Not even like a whole like series. Even though a whole series would be pretty cool. But like, random episode, not explained. Or it's like, we are stuck in an animation. Two-dimensional world. Anyway.
There actually is a two-dimensional monster season or episode of Capaldi's first season, for the record.
Yes. All right. Sorry. Everyone is like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Doctor Who is about an alien character, the Doctor, who travels around in his ship called the TARDIS, which is a blue police box, which you, if you are at any tangentially related to sci-fi media, maybe you have seen on the internet or on someone's backpack, or if you live in the city of Detroit, there is a tiny library.
There's one here too.
Shit with the TARDIS on Warren Avenue in Woodbridge. I think I have a picture of me by it. I gotta dig that out and then we can put it in the show notes.
Definitely.
Because obviously I took a photo of it standing by that. And yes, this show has been on sort of since the 60s. It is a beloved British piece of media, and because of the internet, also a beloved piece of media all over the world. And it is so long running because, like James Bond, kind of, you can kind of built into the show as a way to keep swapping out the actors because the Doctor regenerates and turns and just like keeps going, but you can have new actors. So that's why you're like, why are these guys numbered? That's why.
Yeah.
There are colloquially, what are we at? 11? No, we're at 13?
13.
13th Doctor.
Whitaker is the 13th, so we're about to be on the 14th. Although I think we're counting David Tennant regenerating again as the 14th, so I think that Shudigawa is going to actually be the 15th Doctor.
Okay. And so that's like kind of it in a nutshell, folks. Obviously, there's a lot of complicated lore and backstory that you could get into, which we'll get into a little bit because it's sort of the focus of this episode. As the 50th anniversary episode, that kind of, it goes all out and also has a lot of callbacks to both the original OG series and to the reboot continuation that started in 2005. We're going to get to a lot of the nitty-gritty stuff. And if you wanted to start, you could essentially start with whatever Doctor, honestly. I would recommend starting with 9 because I actually personally really love 9. I think he is maybe not as popular of a Doctor because it's just he was only here for one season, but I think Christopher Eccleston was a great Doctor, honestly. So I think he had some stuff going for him that I appreciated. Is all.
He's grown on me mostly because like a lot of the episodes in season one are actually like really, really good, tight episodes. And so I'll like rewatch them because the plot is great. I don't love him.
That's fair. He's not a fan favorite, which is I think kind of why I like him. Because I'm always like, that's fine. You know?
Yeah.
You can't have the sexual charisma David Tennant to coast on.
Yeah, and like they do make up for it by bringing in Captain Jack, so.
Yeah.
Which, listeners, Captain Jack is an immortal bisexual time traveler who I think, like Spike on Buffy, just has chemistry with literally everyone. And a running joke on the show is that, like, he says hi to someone and the doctor, like, chastises him. It's like there's a time and a place. He's like, I'm just saying hi, but everyone's like, you're not just saying hi.
I love how you bring that up, considering there's a couple episode arc where James Marsters is also playing his sort of rival bisexual time traveler.
Yes.
And you're like, worlds collide, sexual chemistry collides.
We should state that's in Torchwood, not in Doctor
that's
Who.
That's in Torchwood?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you're right. In an episode of Torchwood that happens, which, don't watch Torchwood. But you can find YouTube videos of that if you are so inclined.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the only other thing is, like, the doctor always has a companion. It's very important that the doctor have at least in the new run, a human companion. I think in the old one, often they were from other planets. But basically, the doctor has a hard time having a conscience, which I think comes up in this episode, and so needs a human around to be like, what are you doing, my friend? Like, you've been alive for too long, you've forgotten.
Yeah. And because humans can pair bond with just about anything, it really works out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. So this episode, shall we? I wrote the summary today, everyone, so it's not going to be as funny as you're usually used to. I'm sorry. All right. The Day of the Doctor, in which... On Gallifrey, in a face we haven't seen before, the Doctor decides to end the Time War by stealing a super weapon called the Moment, which is so powerful it has developed a conscience. That conscience takes the form of Rose Tyler as Bad Wolf, who decides to talk him out of killing all of his own people by showing him what it will turn him into, aka David Tennant and Matt Smith. She gathers them all together in 1500s England, where an attempted Zygon invasion is underway. More on that later. The three doctors reflect on the whole last of their species thing and have some touching moments, eventually leading them to conclude that it was the right decision after all, but this time they will do genocide together for moral support. Clara, who showed up a little while ago, is like, wait, no, I don't think that was the point, which the moment as Rose agrees with. The doctors realize that they have three TARDISes, which means that they can do some sort of spacey-wacy thing and lock Gallifrey in a pocket universe and let their enemies, the Daleks, kill each other. It probably works. Meanwhile, that whole Zygon invasion thing has been going on. In the 1500s, they hid inside some Time Lord bigger on the inside paintings that they somehow got a hold of, and now in 2013, they've busted out and are going to take over the planet by shape-shifting into the people in charge of the Unified Intelligence Task Force, UNIT, and getting access to the Black Archive, aka the Alien Tech Depot. Kate Stewart, head of UNIT, is going to blow up London to stop them, but the doctors show up to be like, this is actually a lesson for me because it's like my situation in miniature, thanks for the insight, and make everyone forget that if they're human or Zygon so that they have to reach a compromise, which they apparently do, but we don't know what it is because that's not the point of the episode. The end.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That's an excellent, excellent summary.
Now we're going to start things off 25 minutes in with today's headlines. Doctors say you should avoid this one thing if you want to heal from your trauma. Is crossing your own time stream the thing holding you back from moving on?
Y'all, dudes will cross their own timelines, but won't go to therapy.
All right.
Oh, Jesus.
We turn to the front page where we talk about everything that doesn't go anywhere else. You start.
The very beginning of this episode, Eleven suggests to Clara that they could go have, or Clara asks if they could have cocktails on the moon. And I'm like, I would also like to have cocktails on the moon. Thanks. Someone made that happen. Thank you.
Agreed. It's very cute, that opening scene between the two of them.
Yeah, where she sexually rides into the TARDIS on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Yeah, my first note is that Kate Stewart... So remember... In 2013, when you could have different ringtones for different people.
Yeah.
She has a special ringtone for when the doctor is calling her, and it's the TARDIS sound.
A plus.
I love that so much. I just love it so much.
A plus plus. Yeah, I think at the height of my Doctor Who, like previous Doctor Who love, I think I actually did have a chunk of the, like the intro to Eleven's Doctor Who theme is like my ringtone. But I had to change it because then when I heard it, it gave me anxiety because I'm like answering the phone. So I don't have ringtones anymore because I'm like, I can't have a song that I like because then I feel anxious when I hear it.
Yeah, totally. Same. Yeah. When I used to have different ringtones for different people, I had some song that I liked as the one that played like just for when my family members were calling me. And then, yes, I would get anxiety every time that song came on when I was listening to the CD or whatever. And I was like, this isn't good. This isn't the point. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Modern technology, man. I could not help. So we see a bit of a city in Gallifrey in the Time War in this like 3D oil painting Time Lord art, which I feel like there's a joke about AI in there somewhere that I don't have the brain power to make. But I feel like it looked like a deleted scene from Star Wars because a lot of like shooting like red and green like lasers and like weird spaceships flying around. And I'm like, okay, y'all. I know it's hard to make a show, create a scene where it's like you're having a space battle and not somehow have it reference or feel like something from Star Wars. But using the red and the green lasers, I'm like, this is on purpose, probably. Or else you could have used literally any other color.
Yeah, because also, I mean, I know this is Dalek ships and not Daleks themselves, but they're, when they blast people, it's blue. So it would make sense that their ships would be firing blue light things too. Although I guess some lightsabers are blue, so.
Yeah, most of them are blue and green. And if you're evil, they're red. And if And if you're literally Samuel L. Jackson who requested a purple lightsaber, you have a motherfucking purple lightsaber.
Yeah, it's the best. So,
I know, I love him. Anyway.
So I don't know about or care about British royalty, but I do love this like running joke where there was apparently a virgin queen, but actually she wasn't the virgin queen because David Tennant married her. The 10th Doctor married her. I guess I should be using numbers. And we see it in this episode and it's great. And I just want to give like a shout out for the part where he like proposes because he thinks that she's the Zygon. He's like trying to trick her. And then realizes that it was actually her all along. And then, like, kind of looks at the camera and is like, oh, I'm going to be king. It's
right. Really good. And, of course, Queen Elizabeth's like, clearly, yes, I would like to jump this, like, leggy alien dude. Great. Yeah. You don't think that I'm, like, a weaker person because I'm a lady? Great. And you're hot? Let's do this.
Yeah.
You can be king. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, same, honestly. So, mm-hmm. There are so many jokes in this episode kind of making fun of sort of the staples of like New Who.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how, so when I was, okay, sorry, side note. What have you been calling the like younger/older Doctor, because I just have in my notes is like leather doctor because he's wearing like a leather duster.
He's the war doctor.
He's the war doctor.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what the internet or what the episode says we should call him. That's how he's credited.
Yeah, that's what it said in the summary. I was like going through because I'm trying like, how do I condense this? And I'm like, the war doctor. Anyway, so the war doctor pointing out how silly it is to point the sonic screwdriver like a gun is an incredible just inside joke about the show, essentially, where I'm like, yes, that is deeply silly, thank you.
It's so great because the show tries all the time to be like this, what he's like, it's a scientific instrument, not a water pistol. And the show's like, no, it's a screwdriver, it's like, this is science fiction. And you're like, baby, you're a fantasy show, that's a magic wand. Like, literally the instructions is point and think, and then it does whatever you need it to do, unless the object you're trying to do something to is wood. That's its one thing that it can't do. And, like, I mean, literally, the war doctor with 10 and 11, they point their screwdrivers at a Dalek, and fucking light shoots out and blows up a Dalek. That's never happened before. It's a magic wand. So, yes, I love it.
Yeah, I know.
Piggybacking off of that, I love that. So he says, like, what are you going to do? Build a cabinet at them? And just for the record, that is the third time in New Who that joke has been made. Jack Harkness makes that joke, and then River Song makes that joke. And I just love it that they're like, why do you call this a screwdriver? Like, why are you so dedicated to calling it that?
The joke never gets old. It's always funny because it is deeply silly to call it a... I mean, I appreciate this, like, idea where it's like, oh, you know, it's not a weapon, it's a tool. And it's like, no, it's a wand, but
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also like the first two times that it's made, it's someone who has a gun, which is what you need in the circumstance that they're in, being like, you have a screwdriver. What are you going to do? Build a cabinet? And, like, in that moment, it's a useless screwdriver because someone is there with a more effective weapon, and he doesn't have to make it a weapon and can be like, oh, it is a screwdriver. I don't know. I fucking love it. I just love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, also piggybacking off of that, just the bit about 10 and 11 comparing the sizes of their screwdrivers, which, folks, is kind of a euphemism in this regard.
I mean, it's definitely a euphemism because Tenet literally is like compensating for something. Regeneration, it's crapshoot.
So funny. So funny. So good.
Yeah, they do a lot of, like, the three doctors do a lot of, like, sniping at each other, kind of, whatever. And it's all great. I love all of everything that they're doing. But when Eleven is introducing them to, like, the Queen's Guard or whatever, and he's like, I'm the doctor and these are my co-conspirators, Sandshoes and Granddad.
Yes. And, like, also a good shout out to whatever episode it is. And it's like, these are my co-conspirators, the nose, the legs, and Mrs. Robinson. Uh-huh. Like, we're friends. Just like, bro.
I think it's your turn.
Okay, so I didn't notice this initially, but I was reading through TV Tropes to get as many of the shout outs that I think that I missed. And I thought that you would appreciate this, in which the head general and when they're on Gallifrey and they're like in the war room, is obviously a Picard shout out because he's like a bald dude who has like the like four pips rank of like general on his like collar, just like Picard does.
That's great.
Yeah, and I'm like, you're right. Every sci-fi universe should have a Picard show.
He's like Picard's shadow self.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like the first time I watched this episode, so listeners who haven't watched it, they're like trapped in a cell in the Tower of London in the 1500s, and the door of the cell is made of wood, so they can't use their magic wand to get out. And so they're like, oh, we all have the same sonic screwdriver. It's just been, like, upgraded over the years. So, like, we can figure out how to dissolve the door if we, like, the oldest screwdriver, if the war doctor scans the door and then, like, establishes a permanent subroutine doing the math to figure out how to dissolve the door. And then, like, Eleven's screwdriver is 400 years older, and so it will have figured it out, right? Whatever. The first time I heard that, I like immediately integrated into my brain the idea of a permanent subroutine to like explain that thing that when, you know, when you're like having a conversation and you're like, what is that thing that I'm thinking of? I can't remember that name, whatever. And then like a week later, all of a sudden it's like ping and you like remember it. That's what's happening, is you've just established a permanent subroutine of trying to figure out the name of that person that you can't remember.
Right. Yeah. Now.
And I just love having that. It makes me happy.
Yeah. I feel like that's a little bit of my part of my writing process, where I just think about a thing and then it like percolates in the back of my brain. Then I'm like, oh, that is what I want. Anyway. Yes. Yep. No. I love that part. Also related to this scene, the scream that I let out, because this is like a 5-minute scene about them figuring out how they're going to evaporate this door, only for Clara to walk in and be like, y'all, this door wasn't locked. There's like literally 3 of y'all. Did none of you try the door? And I just, I actually screamed out loud because it was so funny, because like this sort of sci-fi trickery is like a staple of Doctor Who. And then for Clara just to be like, okay, but y'all, for real, it's just so funny. It was so good.
Oh, it really is. It's excellent. All right. So a thing that's true about this episode is that they intended for the Ninth Doctor to be the War Doctor, to be the doctor that had killed everyone, right?
Yeah.
But Eccleston is like, I don't know, a piss baby about Doctor Who and like loves to just complain about everything and wouldn't come back, basically. He like wouldn't come back and was like, also, you're not gonna like make my doctor the bad doctor. Anyway, so I think that it's true. I hope that it's true that when the War Doctor is regenerating and says, I do hope that the ears are a bit less conspicuous this time, it's like an intentional dig.
Oh, no, it is an intention. That is intentionally a dig.
I love it so much.
So. But yeah, you know, just a playful ribbing between Doctor regenerations. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. Yeah, no, another excellent call out.
It's so funny.
All right. I actually don't have anything else in this section.
Cool. Yeah. I just have, which I guess I said in my summary, so it doesn't matter. We just don't like, they're just like, you don't need to know what happened with the Zygon thing. It's fine. And it does actually come back in Capaldi's season. We get to learn what it was, but like just the show's openness to being like, we know that you know that this is not the point of this episode. You don't care what the compromise was. Goodbye.
Yeah.
It's lovely. I love it.
Yeah. It's like, you're here because you are a fan of Doctor Who, potentially for several decades.
Right.
And you want to see as many doctors on screen as humanly possible.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Which is true.
Welcome to the style section, where we talk about aesthetics.
Briefly mention this, but I do have to shout out Clara's red dress, leather motorcycle jacket, leather motorcycle gloves combination. I am not immune to a cutie on a motorcycle wearing leather. So
very fair.
It's a great look. Good for her.
Yeah, she does look amazing. Everyone on Gallifrey wears red all the time. No one's allowed to wear any other colors, including all of the children. I'm not sure why about that, aside from like they need a way to signify to us that these are like Gallifreyan children, and you can tell by all the red.
Maybe that's the, I don't know. Maybe the red dye is one of the biggest imports out of Gallifrey. It's like Time Lords and red dye. I don't know.
They have a non-beetle-based red dye that's deeply in demand on all the vegan planets.
I mean, you know, it's probably very ecologically friendly to only use like a red dye that doesn't involve precious stones, metals, literal poisons, or beetles. So. Mm. You know, they are supposed to be a more advanced people, so why not?
Very true.
It would also maybe explain the eclectic outfits of the Doctor, where it's like, I'm fucking never wearing all red again, mm-hmm. so... before we get into the Doctor's looks, though, I have just a couple more things, which is the one assistant in her obvious nod to the Fourth Doctor with her very large striped scarf, which even before I watched Doctor Who, I was aware of, because there used to be in the 90s this like catalog of like sci-fi merch, because it's the 90s, where else you're going to get your sci-fi merch? And one of the things this catalog had was a like accurate Fourth Doctor scarf that was like 12 feet long.
Oh my god.
And like, so I would look at it in the catalog and be like, that is like really cool, but also seems very impractical. Yeah. But I was always deeply fascinated by people who wanted this like 12 foot long scarf from a show that I had up to that point had like never even heard of. And I'm mm-hmm. like, all right, that seems cool and weird, but all right, folks. I mean, I think this scarf is longer than a normal scarf, but definitely not 12 feet long.
Probably not, no. Yeah, Osgood is a Doctor super fan. She's like one of my favorite recurring characters and wears like different First Doctor Who run based like outfit things in the different times that she shows up on the show. It's really great.
That's adorable. Yeah. She's like read all the files and she's like, this is great. This is my personality now. And I'm like, so many fans can appreciate that. Exactly. So good for her.
So I actually want to do a little crossover thing and say in the sort of museum-y space that they're in the tower, there's like a giant pufferfish that's like illuminated from below. Did you see that? And my immediate thought was like, oh, if only Ed could see that.
The crossover we need, which is the Doctor visits Blackbeard the pirate, and he's gay. That would be great.
That would be just so great. It would make me so happy.
So my last bit of not Doctor aesthetic is the extremely boobs out Queen Elizabeth dress they have her in.
Yeah.
I'm like, the first thing I notice is like, that is some really excellent like period wear. And I'm like, wow, your boobs are just all the way out. And it's, and that, listeners, not literally all the way out, but she is in a corset that is just really making her boobs look great.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I have no idea if it's historically accurate or not, but she looks amazing. And it's what I would put on if I were the Queen of England in the 1500s and going on a date with a hot alien. Like, yeah.
Like a date where it's like, here's a picnic and like a horse ride and like, enter whatever kind of sexual things that we can do without, with me still technically being a virgin who is unmarried. We can do, it's a lot, mm-hmm. a lot of things you can do that's not P&V. Mm-hmm. So yeah, good for her.
For real. So do you want to start with TARDIS control rooms or do you want to start with outfits?
Ooh, we can do either.
I asked the question. You have to pick.
Let's do the TARDIS control rooms. I have it as my notes and there's the living room, but that's not what it's called.
So we see three iterations of... And Tennant inherited his from 9, right? I don't think it changed.
I don't think it changed.
I don't think they were planning in the budget to have to build a whole new control room after season 1. So.
Yeah.
And it's really, I found it like really fun to like have all of them available for us to like compare and contrast.
Yeah, the sort of like nostalgia of seeing like the 10 TARDIS living room, just like, oh, good times.
Yeah, and 11 calls it his grunge phase,
which is really funny.
And them getting all nostalgic for quote unquote the round things that are from, did the TARDIS interface change in the original run or was it just the same?
I don't know. I don't know when it changed, but because I know that the round things are definitely from like the first, very first season. And maybe it changed with like 4 or 5 or 6, I think, because we also don't, because we get another change in the episode where the TARDIS becomes human or human or a like person shaped temporarily and they're in that weird pocket universe.
Yeah.
And I know this because like Moffat realized that there was just like the sets still from like some of the Doctor Who TARDIS sets, like not in a basement, in a room, like somewhere. And they're like, oh, we still have these?
Yeah.
Fucking gonna use this shit.
And that leads to one of my favorite lines from that episode where like the TARDIS as woman says something about like an interface that she has archived, like how many she has archived, and the Doctor's there haven't been that many. You can't archive something that doesn't exist yet. And she's just like, you can't. Just
really great. Yeah, that's an excellent episode.
Yeah. Outfits.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm really here for the War Doctor's leather coat. Sorry, 10 and 11.
Yeah, he's very a completely different kind of like sci-fi future show, you know? He stepped out of a post-apocalypse show.
I was waffling between if he stepped out of Mad Max or Firefly, because that's somewhere in between those aesthetics is where the War Doctor fits.
100%. That is so accurate.
So, because he's wearing a leather duster that like goes to like mid-knee, and like a handkerchief that's like tied a little bit elaborately around his neck. And I think he's wearing it looks maybe double-breasted, but I can't totally tell. Because I did not look at a screenshot of this before I started describing this.
It is. Oh, yeah. He is wearing like a double-breasted leather vest.
I noticed the buttons, but I didn't notice them. I couldn't tell the materials. So I don't think we ever get a close. We only get a close-up of like him from like sort of like the clavicles up. So I really couldn't tell.
Yeah. Here, let me drop it in the chat. It also has like a pocket chain that goes in both directions.
Interesting.
It is a good look. I am extremely partial to Eleven's wardrobe because, and like, this is so silly because you like never get to see it after the first episode, but in his first episode, he steals his outfit from like the like changing room at the hospital where Rory works, because he's like still wearing this like burned up suit from when he regenerated.
Mm-hmm.
And the shirt that he steals, it's a like button down shirt that has like a floral sort of stripey pattern on it. It's really beautiful. However, the sleeve cuffs are striped, like they're, what is this, horizontally striped, like red and white. I've never seen a dress shirt like it. It looks so cool and I love it so much, and literally it's always under his suit jacket. You never see it, but I know it's there, and it makes me love his outfit like just so much.
Yeah, I mean, I love Eleven's outfit because I seriously love a bow tie because I am a dandy. Surprise everyone. And like, I don't know, I think that Ten's outfit is fun, but it's really just the chucks part that really like makes the whole thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ten, you lose out in this ranking of outfits, unfortunately.
Yeah, although he does have they're the most practical of the shoes optioned for the amount of running that the Doctor does. Like 11 and 12 both wear dress shoes, and it's like, that is not what you want to wear for running.
Actually, because of my fandom obsession at the time, 11 actually wears like he's actually wearing leather boots that I remember seeing like a Tumblr post like years ago that are like, you could buy them in real life, but they're like made by one tiny factory in the UK somewhere, and I'm like, okay, well, I can't, if I'm trying to cosplay, I can't buy these boots, but they are very cute.
Yeah, no, they are, but they're still like, They're the kind of shoes that have like the rounded, the skinny laces that come untied all the time. And I'm sure they're not like super grippy, and they're just not as like bendy. Like if you're jogging, you want a shoe that's like,
that's true,
very flexible.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess maybe if you're a very spry Time Lord.
Yeah, no, I obviously it's fine. Like he's doing fine. It's kind of like Buffy constantly wearing like heeled boots and
yeah,
running as much as she does. And you're like, whatever, you're supernatural.
I was just going to say the lack of arch support in a pair of Chuck Taylors makes him actually not very good on his shoes.
No, that's very true.
Oh, man.
However,
love a pair of Chuck Taylors. But
TARDIS generated shoes are going to actually be like perfect. So yeah. I take it all back. It doesn't matter. The Doctor can wear any shoes and they're going to be perfect for the amount of running required.
Yeah, they're going to be out of literal space age material that is yeah, probably like walking in a cloud that we can yeah, only dream of.
Yeah. Anything else?
I don't particularly care for the Fez. That's just me. I'm like, okay, bro. Like, there are a lot of other fun hats you could be wearing, but I get it.
It's just it's a silly running joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a running
but I think
joke.
It's like, can't make fun of Chuck Taylors, my dude, when you're wearing a fez. I'm sorry. It's just, no, we can't. I mean, it's funny, but I'm like, mm-mm.
Welcome to the politics section, where we talk about things that are fucked up.
My first thing is that I'm actually really glad that sort of the purpose of this episode is showing that the Doctor didn't really commit genocide, because I'm like, you're one dude deciding to commit genocide for billions of people. Like, that's fucked up. not a great thing to show, I think. So I appreciate the fact that it's like, oh, actually, we can kind of put everyone on pause and not have murdered billions of Gallifreyans, and maybe you won't be the last Time Lord. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's definitely better. I think that, like, for people who haven't watched Doctor Who, like, the context is that the Time Lords and the Daleks, which are a manufactured species by one evil dude who are like bred to be only evil and to want only Daleks to exist in all of time and space.
They're murder robots. I guess, I mean,
they're not robots though. They're like weird true octopi inside of a robot shell. And so they're like in a battle. And they both have time travel. And so, like, it's called the Time War because it's, like, existing at all points. But also it's, like, spreading out through space in a way that I think of, like, the Saga comics. Where it's, like, it just keeps taking over, like, more and more worlds around them. So Right. The reason behind the Doctor being, like, I have to blow up Gallifrey is basically, like, the only way to kill all of the Daleks and, like, end the war was by using the moment, this magical murder like weapon of mass destruction, to just like take everything out all at once. And yeah, that's fucking heavy, and like has been the driving force behind the Doctor that we've had up until this season, so for like 7 seasons at this point. And it's really nice to have it be like, but maybe not.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like, I think both for his character and also just, like, both for the sort of, like, terrible implications of him, like, making this choice just sort of kind of, like, on his own is, like, who are you to make this choice, my dude, you know?
I feel like this is a fun, like, philosophy class question, though, because, like, would you make a different choice?
I mean, that's true. I mean, it is sort of, like, it's hard because it's, like, I think that if it's like, right, 7 billion, like let's say 7 billion Gallifreyans versus like the entire universe of like, you know, conscious beings, it's sort of like you kind of have to make the like push the red button call. So yeah, I don't know, it's just like I would not ever want to be in that position.
Right. And unlike with the Zygon invasion parallel, there is no compromise to be had because Daleks are just literally evil. Like, you can't reach a compromise with a Dalek because, like, I think confusingly what they want is for there to be only Daleks. And then I'm like, what would you do? You would be so bored. Stop trying to kill everything that's not a Dalek, because eventually, if you're successful, you're all going to be fucking miserable because all you love is killing. Come on. Think about it.
No, they're just going to invent Dalek racism, and it's like, oh, well, you're a, like, different color Dalek, so we're going to fucking murder you. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
This could turn, like, it's just kind of like, you're just going to turn on yourself because it's like, what else? This is all you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't really have the foresight to think about that, to be like, all right, but if you succeed,
right,
that's really your worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly think that, like, probably I would also make the choice to kill all of my own people if it meant saving the rest of the universe. Because it seems like, also, given, like, what we see in this episode is that, like, the Daleks are going to win. Like, in that moment, the Daleks are going to win. And if the Time Lords are the only species, the only planet that can fight them, then, like, it's not just, like, our war is going to ravage the entire universe. It's, like, they'll just move on from Gallifrey to, like, take over everywhere else. So.
Yeah. What do you have? I mean, do you have everything in this section?
I do. Yeah. I do really, really love the line, like, if this doesn't work, at least we failed doing the right thing as opposed to succeeding in doing the wrong. I think that's really powerful.
I mean, good words to live by? I don't know. Yeah,
totally.
Honestly?
Yeah. In the, like, Zygon plot line, the only people in the room who end up knowing which one is the human and which is the Zygon are the two Osgoods, because one of them has the inhaler. And it's human Osgood that starts out with the inhaler and is like, shh, like, don't tell. And I think that's, like, a really lovely moment and makes me really happy.
I know, they can be friends, I guess. Because I mean, you know sort of where this plot resolves, but I'm kind of like, I guess shape-shifting into humans and living as humans is clearly the only solution to this, I guess, kind of, is being like, we can just share planet Earth, you know. You could have thrown in clean up the oceans or something, but whatever. I mean, that's just me being like, the microplastics. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. I did think that was actually a very lovely moment. I want to talk about the Black Archives.
Okay.
Which is a shout out to, I think, something that happens in the Sarah Jane Chronicles. They bring it up. But basically, like, bunker of, like, the Doctor collected stuff that UNIT is like, we actually don't want you to have. Like, we need to keep this so secret from both the Doctor and other countries that, like, everyone who works here has to have their memory wiped every time they leave, which is funny. Not funny. It is a good safety precaution, honestly. But also, you would have to pay me so much money to work at a place where it's like, I'm having my first day for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, are you kidding me? Is that dude going to be okay? Like, what is that doing to his brain? Like, when something fucked up happens and you just don't remember and they're just like, we can just pretend it didn't happen. No one needs to call HR.
Yep.
We just don't remember. And I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah, agreed. So my only other thing here is just, like, the love that I have for, like, when Kate is explaining to Clara about, like, how the vortex manipulator is, like, their most guarded thing, because, and then is like, imagine Americans with the ability to rewrite history.
I laughed out loud because I'm like, that is correct. Yeah. Even though the UK is not innocent of having done shitty things in the history of the world, aka colonizing half of the planet. But I was immediately then like, yeah, someone in the U.S. government would be like, slavery's still legal. Sorry, y'all. This was the best thing that happened to the U.S. economy. We want it back. Which is, I think, true of a lot of, like, white Republicans really just want slavery back. Yeah. So, see the incarceration numbers and how much prisoners get paid to do things. It is not a lot, and it is a lot of things that they do. So, yeah, I'm like... It's kind of, it's like, it should have been a self-own, but I'm like, I also understand that did because they are, is correct. I would not trust anyone in America with the ability to time travel. 100%. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a very good joke, but also I'm like, yes.
Welcome to Editorials, where we rant about stuff. One of the things, maybe the thing that I love the most about this episode is the tangible giddiness that you see from Matt Smith about getting to act with David Tennant. It's so fucking adorable. Like, it just fills my heart like a balloon.
Yeah, I think the... It's, yeah, you're right. It's just lovely. It is very lovely. And I mean, I know that both of them were just really super stoked to be playing the Doctor as characters. So it's just like very exciting to be, for Matt Smith to be just like, I get to be on screen with David Tennant. I remember watching you on TV, man. It's great.
Yeah.
So it's very, it is just very cute.
It's so cute. So cute. The first scene in the woods is just like full of so many moments that just feel so effervescent. You know, and like, yeah. Oh God, I just love it when they both put on their glasses and then like, oh,
it's so good. It's so good. It's like, it's actually kind of sad that we're like only see them interact in this episode, but thankfully it's an hour and 15 minutes. So
yeah,
which normally these episodes are like 45 ish minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Folks. So this is like, the closest we have to a Doctor Who movie, essentially.
Yeah. Besides the actual Doctor Who movie that came out in the 90s. It's not good.
I can't imagine it is not good. All right. Yeah. My only rant is that... Okay, wait. Sorry. What are these shape-shifting aliens called?
Zygons.
The Zygons.
Our Power Rangers monsters.
I had so many names for them in my notes. Yeah, the Zygons are... Excellent. They're excellent aliens because obviously shape-shifting aliens has been done before in a lot of media. But what I think takes it the extra step is that Zygons clearly have some kind of telepathy, mind reading abilities. So it's like, even if you were to do the trope of a like, well, okay, say something that your duplicate wouldn't know. It's like, they would know that. They know everything about you. And that sort of like scene where the... Zygon Osborn like reads her to filth. It's like real. I'm just like, damn, that was unnecessary, but also excellent.
Yeah, but she's like, you've got some perfectly awful memories in here.
It was so rude. It's like, that was uncalled for, but perfect. Because it's like, oh yeah, like you would literally not be able to tell by talking to a Zygon if you know, they were the original person or the Zygon person. So
right.
It's just like, it's an excellent threat. And it also just really makes the sort of conclusion of like, well, we're just going to wipe everyone's memories. So now you don't know who is who. Cause you wouldn't know. You would have all these memories of being a person and none of the memories of being a Zygon. It's just be like, but I remember having that like 15th birthday party. So like,
yeah.
I always appreciate a well thought out, I'm trying to decide, figure out what I'm trying to say. Alien? This is just well thought out, where it's like, you've done shapeshifting before, but like having like shapeshifting where it's just like almost infallible is great.
Yeah.
You know, because it makes it so much scarier.
Yeah.
You know, even though despite looking like weird tentacle penises, like they're not really scary, I think.
Yeah. They really went in on the like venom sacs and the tongue thing.
which was also really funny.
It's so funny. Yeah. So listeners, there's like this ongoing kind of thing where like David Tennant's doctor has already kissed a Zygon because he like tells Queen Elizabeth that they're surprisingly good kissers, but then like is kissed again by a Zygon because like the actual Queen Elizabeth and the Zygon Queen Elizabeth both kiss him, and Matt Smith is just like ribbing him about kissing a Zygon, is like suckers, like venom sacs in the tongue, whatever. And like they say it, but then when Kate morphs, they spent their entire CGI budget on this one face morph, she morphs into a Zygon and she's just like spitting so much apparently venom out as she morphs.
It was I'm glad that they spent their CGI budget because it looked really cool, and I'm like, this is deeply effective.
Yeah, no, it's so unsettling.
And for folks, this, what we're describing, like, isn't creepy. It's like kind of gross, but I mean, this shit is like milder than like some of the gore on Buffy, honestly. Yeah. So I feel like if you're gonna watch this episode or other episodes, you know, there's some deeply weird and kind of creepy ones, but I think none of them really approach like scary.
No.
But yeah, that was deeply gross. And yeah. I also just like, all right, yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the personal section where we talk about sexy stuff.
What I really like about this episode is it's sort of implying about how much like 10 is a doctor that fucks. And I mean, 11 is Mary's River Song, so clearly he's not like a celibate hero. But we have him seducing Queen Elizabeth, you know, at this picnic, and the sort of assumption that this isn't the first time that he has kissed a Zygon, mm-hmm. that Eleven mentions. And it is just correct. It is the correct, the correct assumption about the way David Tennant is playing the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. When he's doing his like farewell tour, because listeners, he like dies slowly of radiation poisoning, so he gets to like go on a farewell tour and like give everyone that he loves a gift. The gift that he gives Captain Jack is like a boyfriend. By which I mean he just like gives him someone's number, but like, yeah. It's very much like, here's this dude I met that I think you'll like. Here you go.
I mean, but also at the end of his first season, when he gives, where he like sends Rose to like a different universe with like a human-ish version of himself to be like, have fun with my sort of double. I'm just like, bro, what?
It's his third season.
Okay.
Because it's after the Dr. Donna. So yeah, it's
okay.
Yeah, no, he's definitely like the horny doctor.
And
it's great.
And the fact that, like, Eleven shows up and is like, I'm not here to, like, kink shame this threesome you're about to have, but, like, important things. I need your head in the game about this, like, sort of, like, important A-plot things that happen. Like, he just, like, doesn't even question the fact that, like, okay, you're doing some weird shit in the woods, that's fine. But.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is very relevant to my one thing that is not in this episode, but is something that is canonically confirmed to me by this episode. So, this episode says point blank, when there's more than one doctor in a place at the same time, the time streams are out of sync and they can't remember it, right?
Yeah.
So, that's true. In A Good Man Goes to War, Rory goes to get River from Stormcage, and she's like, it's my birthday, the doctor took me ice skating, whatever, whatever, and then they're talking, and Rory's like, blah, 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 unless there's two of him, and River goes, now that's a whole different birthday, which very clearly she's like, I have fucked more than one doctor at a time, right?
Which, of course.
Right. And duh. So, and the only thing is that, like, canonically, she meets Tennant the day that she dies. So it's like, when would that have happened? However, we know that he would not remember having met her if it was when he's having a threesome with her and Eleven. So, and she acts like she already knows him in that face when they meet, even though it's their first time meeting and then she dies, or it's his first time meeting her. So he very well could have met her, had this birthday threesome with her, forgotten that it ever happened, and then met her for the first time again in silence in the library.
No, headcanon accepted. Thank Somewhere you. In between all of this, Eleven's like, okay, listen, I owe my wife really big. Yeah. So I'm gonna need you to hop in my TARDIS.
Yeah,
just like, go with it. You will not complain about. I swear to you, this is gonna be the coolest evening of our entire lives.
Yeah, and like they obviously, if you were the doctor, you would absolutely have sex with your other incarnations. Like, why would you not do that? So
yeah.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. I just am so glad to be able to tell this theory to someone who's not Evan, who has heard me talk about it like 75 times.
I am so happy to hear this because, yes, you're correct. And I mean, obviously, Sans in the library is crushing for a variety of reasons, but the fact that we don't ever get to see much more like banter slash flirting between David Tennant and David Tennant's doctor and River is just a travesty. Yeah. But yes.
But now we can all rest easy knowing that they fucked at least one time.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the health and science section where we research stuff. I'm going to start by asking you what you know about the Royal Ravens.
What do I know? A little bit. Okay, so I know that there is a myth slash superstition that if all of the ravens in the Tower of London like leave or like aren't there, that the British Empire will fall.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think maybe from the past like 30 or 40 years, they've like clipped the wings of the ravens that live there. And like they're being fed, obviously, but they're sort of like kept ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ravens, because they used to hang people and like torture people, and it used to be a prison, they would just be ravens there for free food, but now the ravens are just there to be fed and be tourist attraction slash
superstition
insurance. Yeah. Insurance against the fall of the British Empire.
So. Yeah, so that's accurate. Listeners who haven't watched the episode or missed it, at the very beginning, Kate is like eating something and like watching the ravens basically, and says to Osgood, like, the ravens are looking a bit sluggish, get Malcolm to check their batteries, which is hilarious. That's so funny. And so I want to just talk a little bit about the ravens. What you said is like spot on. They have been around since Charles II. I don't know when that was, but it was at a time when there was a royal astronomer, so I'm guessing a long time ago.
Because, that's pretty cool.
Charles II insisted that the ravens of the tower be protected because he was warned, it doesn't say by who, that the crown and the tower itself would fall if they left. And it says, the order was given against the wishes of his astronomer, who complained that the ravens impeded the business of his observatory in the tower.
So, okay. So, I'm definitely imagining some dude in a robe who's like, I'm trying to, like, observe the stars, but I'm being harassed by, like, an entire murder of crows. What is... Unkindness? Is it unkindness of ravens?
Yes.
I'm being harassed by an entire unkindness of ravens because ravens are smart. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, can we just get rid of these guys? And he's like, no, we cannot.
Right. Yes. So, yeah, I fucking love this. I wish I had known this before I went to London so that I could have seen them. But there is a royal raven master, and that is the only person who is allowed to go near the ravens. Their wings are clipped, but they can still fly. So they're not like super kept ravens. They have, like it says, some have gone absent without leave in the past. And then sometimes they get fired.
My God.
A raven named George was dismissed because he was eating television aerials.
Wow.
I guess he was like, you know, a disappointment to the throne. So they had to fire him.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And also, I just think this is incredible. They're fed twice a day by the Raven Master. They dine on a special diet of mice, chicks, rats, and assorted raw meats. But as a special treat, they're given biscuits soaked in blood.
Oh my God. So God.
No.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. I wish it was my job.
You would make such a good Raven Master.
Oh my God. I know.
This is why. Just United States, come on. Why can't we have more fun things, honestly?
This is a country with no chill. This country has zero chill.
It's true.
I mean, maybe arguably the UK also has zero chill, honestly.
So. They at least have some whimsy, though, you know?
Yeah.
All right. We did it.
We did it.
We did it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode. Check the show notes for all the things. Do you want to know the names of the current ravens before we wrap up? All right.
I sure do.
So the current ravens are Jubilee, Harris, Grip, Aaron, Poppy, Georgie, Edgar, and Branwyn.
I love them.